From the hours of 9 to 10 p.m., we will only use the words ass, damn, and hell. We will, however, never use the words or any other sexual or racial slurs. From the 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. hour, we will only use the words ass, damn, hell, and we will, however, never use the words or any other racial or sexual slurs. Now, as it pertains to video, we promise there will be less references. Yeah. Hey, watch your mouth. We will have less references to our enormous genitalia.
And welcome to the Click Nation Podcast. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight, I'm joined by the cast of characters, as always, starting with my brother, D. Adam Black.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Thanks for coming.
And we
thanks for downloading. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We also got Mr. Banff.
Evening, bitches. Your boy, Mr. Banff in the house, a.k.a. the Magnificent Bastard.
And last but not least, Leroy Jetson, Joe Jetstream. Calling you a Jetson character now.
Yeah, I know. I'm the hood Jetson, man. I used to get it on with you Jets when they went to work. That's the way. Leroy Jetstream.
The name's too damn long.
Jetstream, nigga, for sure.
Right. Judy did look kind of dunked out here and there, so that's your fault, huh? Oh, okay, I got you.
Oh, yeah, that is. Why you didn't think I made the show, man? Gotcha. Race relations, it was rough back then.
I feel you.
How come there are no black people in the future?
I don't know.
That, you know what, that's another show.
Yes.
That's a whole other show.
Save that for another time. Or how come there were no black people back in the Stone Age with the Flintstones?
Right.
We didn't want to. Yeah, it wasn't a cool time anyway.
Yeah.
We couldn't be a water buffalo?
No, we didn't want to.
Hey, yo,
I hate to say, the only thing we would have been there for was them big ribs, them Brano ribs.
Yeah.
Well, you know, hey, I mean, shit, you know, if you want to get technical, it was nothing but black people in the Stone Age, so, you know.
Well, yeah, true. You know, yeah, true.
True.
White people did come from black people, black but people, that's a whole nother.
That's a whole nother.
Yeah, can of worms.
Yeah. Later, people, later.
And like I said before, we are the Click Nation. You can find us on our website, theclicknation.com. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at theclicknation, where we have a Facebook fan page. Please make sure to like it and share it with your friends. Facebook.com/theclicknation. And we also have a Google Plus page. We have a YouTube page. Just look for The Click Nation. And if you ever want to send us feedback or any comments, just hit us up on our email, theclicknation@gmail.com. So, fellas, let me ask first, how was the week?
Yeah. Let me stop bullshitting. The week was cool, man. You know, just working, busy. You know how we do.
Yeah, I spent the weekend with Dad and Black helping me do some shopping for the new dog pound.
Oh, yes.
Yep. That was... We got him some little knickknacks and odds and ends, and he should be able to set up his place very nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
I even set up moved one of the end tables around and put the lamp we bought on it.
Awesome.
Maybe one day we'll do an episode describing the day of the move.
Day of the move.
Were there hijinks?
Not really. It was just stressful and tiring and headache inducing.
Should. You know what? You should have told Roy hijinks would have ensued.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And Roy's the best mover too.
Oh, yeah, God.
All you have to do is point him in the direction that you need something moved to. Even if it's heavy, he'll lift it by himself.
He'll be damn. Roy, like, I'll be damn. I'm going to get this shit out the door. I'm like, Roy, man, it's going to fit. It's going to fit.
Shout-outs to fellow Click members, Roy and Reggie, who have not yet appeared on this podcast, but hopefully one day in the future.
Reggie!
That's all we need is extra voices on the show.
Oh, that Jetstream guy is hilarious. We love him.
So hopefully everyone has enjoyed and listened to the last episode, which was, what we titled that episode? I know it had a funky name. It was From the Bit Screen to the Animation Room. And that's currently the episode up now. And
right.
Like I said, I'm going to try to state what the day we start recordings. So today is Tuesday, June 12th, and currently the Oklahoma City Thunder and Miami Heat playoff game one is about to start. They're doing the player introductions on my TV screen, which is muted.
Ooh.
Oh, yes.
Who are we pulling for?
Miami.
You know what?
And I'm not even a fan. I just want LeBron to get a ring so he can sit the hell down and get a ring and be over with.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I just want the Heat to win so my brother can shut the fuck up about the damn Heat. Oh, God. And if they don't win, dude, I'm going to have to hear that shit for a fucking year. He gonna be screaming, LeBron got cheated. Oh, my God. Please, God, let the Heat win.
I'm just looking forward to seeing a good series. Hopefully it goes all the way to Game 7. The two best players in the game, LeBron James and Kevin Durant, putting on the show for his fans. Looking forward to it.
Yay.
Yeah, hopefully it ain't, you know, one team getting swept. That would suck.
That's not going to happen.
No, that's not happening at all. I don't know though if the same Heat that showed up on what was that Saturday night, if they show up, never know. They show up, it might be a sweep.
If the same LeBron James that showed up in Game 6 in Boston,
up dominating,
put up some crazy numbers, 40 something. I know he had over double digit rebounds. But anyway, for now, let's get into some news. This section of the Click Nation podcast is brought to you by the Adam Black.
All right, guys. Basically, we're going to start off with the movie box office. This week, we basically saw Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, score the number one movie in America. It's got 60.3 million. You know, that's powered off of just straight up, you know, kids going to see this movie. Well, it's more of a family movie, so the parents brought the kids out and everything, so it made total sense for it to be number one. So that was number one. The other wide release movie this weekend was Prometheus. It finished second with $51.1 million.
Which is a masterpiece.
Yes.
And also ties into the subject for tonight's show, but we'll get into that later on.
Yes, I'm
actually surprised that Prometheus didn't win the weekend.
I'm not really. I went to the theater. Madagascar, it was sick. I mean,
Madagascar, those movies are popular. It's a kids' movie. All the kids are out of school. I mean, this is an R-rated intelligent science fiction film. It's not really the movie that, you know what I'm saying? It's just not a movie that people gonna be like, oh my god, you know what I'm saying?
So. Yeah, and you know, and agree with Mr. Banff too. For little kids out there, they didn't have that. They haven't had that much stuff out there, kind of for them. You know, this summer is not packed with that much.
Right.
For them, I mean, really. So Madagascar wasn't. You know, kind of their favorite thing coming out. Really, it's really for kids. You know, Avengers, PG, what was Avengers, PG-13?
Yeah.
But for, like, little kids below that, you know, Madagascar might kind of be it, really, for the summer for them.
Yep. And basically, rounding out the top five, Snow White and the Huntsman in its second week got pulled in $23.1 million.
That's amazing.
Yes. I mean, you know, its second week, it's still holding strong, you know, up against two big releases, so that's pretty good. Fourth was Men in Black 3, pulling in another $13.9 million. Followed by Marvel's The Avengers, $11.2 million. So I mean, it's pretty much still a strong box office weekend. So I'm going to pull up the actual how much they've grossed so far. At least, well, we know with Madagascar 3. Let's see. Snow White has already pulled in $182 million worldwide, which is wow. But, you know, that's international. International, it was, you know, it was bonkers over there. Men in Black 3 has already made $487 million in, you know, across the globe. And we know the Avengers has now hit $1.4 billion. So, you know, awesome, awesome for movies.
What else we got?
All right. The next thing, hold on, I'm sorry. Had everything situated.
I've got it open. Next thing up we have is some Marvel movie news. Venom movie to coexist with the Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh,
so of course, okay. The much-rumored Venom movie, I guess, is going to take place in the same universe as The Amazing Spider-Man. If you're talking comic book movies, you got to have a shared universe.
And, you know, after seeing Avengers and with this character, it only makes sense. But I would have preferred them to do a really good Venom versus Amazing Spider-Man movie. But since I didn't get that with this, with Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. Have they given any explanation? I mean, is on this one, is Venom gonna be a good guy or like a bad guy, or how is he gonna?
Description here. It says it's an Eddie Brock story. We want to be as close to the comics as possible, especially an Eddie Brock story. But again, pseudoscience is becoming science. All these tidbits about webs, artificial webs, is a huge industry now. Spider webs have unique qualities that would be huge for communications, fibers, and so forth. So we have taken the approach that we want to make the huge, amazing movie about Eddie. That makes no sense
at all. Yeah, that is what. Wait, that yeah.
And this is who is this talking?
Is that Avi Arad?
Yeah, Avi Arad.
That sounds like some shit he damn say.
So, let me read it. Like, pseudoscience is becoming science. Okay, that kind of makes sense. All these tidbits about webs, artificial webs, is a huge industry now. It is?
I guess that's maybe what maybe he's given an explanation as to how the suit was created, something like that. Maybe that's where they're going with it.
Spider webs have unique qualities that would be huge for communications, fibers, and so forth. I haven't heard anything about
what the testing. What the fuck is he talking about again?
That doesn't make any sense, man. With the whole Eddie Brock story, because they just have this one coming out, so is Eddie Brock going to be? I guess we have to wait when Amazing Spider-Man comes out to see if Eddie makes a cameo.
Which will
be cool to see, but yeah. You know,
I don't think so. So I mean, that's.
And what story does Eddie Brock have anyway? He doesn't have much of a story besides rival news reporter or photographer, news reporter for rival Daily Bugle printing company.
All right.
Or when he tries to go through therapy and he wants to be like a good guy, which lasted every bit of a minute. So,
You know, we'll just have to do a wait and see, guys.
Yeah, we'll wait and see on that one. I mean, next story, please. Yes, next story.
All right. The next thing in the queue was for basically Complex.com did 10 good TV plots left unresolved by cancellation. And it looks like it gives a run through of shows that were on and, you know, just canceled and. Canceled early, and you know, fans were left unresolved. If you want, it was 10. You know, 10. We could go through them real quick.
Let's do that. And shout outs to a listener, one of my high school buddies, John, or on Twitter, he's known as Joannis3000. Thanks for sending this to me, buddy.
Yep. First up is Journeyman. This was an NBC sci-fi drama about a newspaper man played by Kevin McKidd, Dan Vassar, who suddenly begins jumping back in time where he's meant to alter people's destinies. Was light on serialization but heavy on heart and intrigue. Like many other series, it may have fared better in a different year, but alas, it was a casualty of the 2007 writer's strike and did not get the full year extension its cult audience so desperately desired. Mm-hmm. We did receive some answers, or at least some solid theories, on why Vassar is called to change destinies via time travel, as well as offering some kind of closure on his quasi-love triangle between his wife and his ex-fiancee slash fellow traveler, played by Moon Bloodgood. She's hot. Still, 13 episodes was a cruelly small sample of what this show could offer, and we're positive those questions that were left completely unanswered would have made for more intriguing episodes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yes. Another show y'all may remember, I think Jetstream, you said you liked it, Pushing Daisies. This was a show that was on ABC. It was about a pie maker who could bring dead things back to life. Was so fervent that, frankly, we're surprised the series didn't pull off a Hail Mary renewal a la Chuck. But the creator did manage to wrap it up in fine fashion, but with several tantalizing new developments that had fans all but begging him to continue a season 3 in comic form. Which, you know, that's what Jericho did. They did a third season via, I think, IDW.
Oh, in comic form?
Yeah.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. And let's see. The next one is Carnival. This came on HBO.
Yeah.
Let's see. I'm trying to find the... it's rare that HBO and canceled are uttered in the same breath these days. The network is notorious for granting insanely early renewals and sticking with series that garner critical acclaim, if not huge ratings. But this was canceled back when HBO was doing some budget cuts. But supposedly there was a 6-year plan for the show, and it was just cut more than halfway through. Stalling the epic heavily shown showdown between Ben Hawkins and brother Justin. The fan thirst was so real that the show's audience all but demanded that creator Daniel Knopf release the rest of this 4-year outline. He compiled in 2007, releasing the original pitch document, the series Bible, detailing many of the show's answers to its mythology.
I'm a big fan of this next series.
Sliders the greatest, man. I don't give a fuck what nobody say. I love
it. Yeah, man. Sliders is awesome, man.
Yes.
I can't hate on Sliders, dude.
Sometimes showrunners know the unfortunate end is near while in the middle of production and work to craft a suitable conclusion to satisfy their devoted audience. The crack team behind Fox's cult science fiction hit later dumped on sci-fi back when it was still sci-fi. Sliders were not so gracious. The Sliders, people who jump from universe to universe, ended the series mid-battle with the villainous Cro-Mags because the producers thought it would ignite a Save Our Show campaign, thus thugging the increasingly disinterested sci-fi into a sixth season. Or maybe they just want to deliver a nice fuck you to the second network to dump them in as many years. Oh, fuck you.
Ah, yes. Profanity. I love it.
And let's see, the next show is Reunion, which was a Fox show. I think I remember Reunion. Yeah, I do, actually. Reunion wasn't a great show, but once a murder mystery sucks us in, we can't help but stick it throughout of pure curiosity, and unresolved murders are among the most frustrating cliffhangers. Even the substance wasn't there. Reunion had a cool, gimmicky premise that was enough to sustain interest, or so the producers thought. And let me run through the rest of these real quick.
Yeah, I remember that show. It seemed like it was going to be a good idea.
Oh, another show I liked, Flash Forward. I knew.
Yeah, that one was really good, but
it was a good premise, but you could see it going off the rails.
Yeah, they had some plot holes early on in them, but it was still it could have made it. Didn't it get caught up in the strike?
No, it took them too long to get into the story, and fans were complaining, so then they started changing stuff to try to start revealing some of the stuff that happened and what was going to happen within the year. I think is what ended up happening with it. Let's see. Let's read the description here. Without a doubt, the buzziest pilot of that television season, Flash Forward, like the many would-be lost successors that follow, ended up limping to the finish line with only a fraction of its initial audience. The middle of the one and only season was subject to boring placeholder episodes, red herrings, and diversions designed to save the fireworks, the events the characters foresaw for the season finale. Whether or not those answers were delivered is up for debate. What's for sure is that all of that forthcoming goodwill was squandered when the final minutes triggered another time-jumping blackout with enough intriguing future snippets to sustain another two seasons. Yes, the obvious pun about the producers was when they could have flash-forwarded and concluded their show was made ad nauseum. Going back to Sliders, I wonder if Sliders is on, like, Netflix or something.
It is on Netflix.
Oh.
It is in my queue as we speak.
Good man.
Yes.
Oh, another show. Yeah, after getting from 7 on through these lower numbers, we're getting in shows I actually liked. Heroes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Still waiting on the resolution for that show. I need a TV movie or something. Something.
That would be great. A good miniseries on that would be great. Just finish that out.
Yeah.
Let's see. By the time Heroes was put to pasture, most of us had jumped ship, including me, because I gave up on the last season. The superhero drama became flabby and aimless, relying on fruitless trips to the future and countless retcons to generate more story. It seemed like cancellation was the best thing for everybody, until the final scene featured Hayden Panettiere's infamously indestructible cheerleader reenacting her high dive from the series pilot in front of a group of reporters with the cameras rolling. The quote-unquote heroes finally coming out to the world was about the only plot line that would have actually made us sorry the show wouldn't continue. Mission accomplished. And let's see. Now we're going to the top final three. Rubicon. Some AMC show that I've never heard of before. Any of you guys heard of that?
Nope.
Nope.
Skipping it. The 4400 on USA.
Oh, I used to love 4400.
I like that show, man.
I never watched it, but it sounds like something I would have liked.
It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. It was one of those
don't miss an episode because you might miss something that you need to know. You know, it's one of those kind of shows. It's a good. It was a good show. I think it's on Netflix too, if I remember right.
Yeah, it's definitely a show that, you know, it like you said, if you miss one episode, you've, you know, pretty much messed yourself up. But I mean, it was well acted. It had a good story to it. It's just a shame it wound up coming to an end.
I like this description for it. Before, all USA shows were interchangeable riffs on the Burn Notice formula.
Yeah.
The network was home to this criminally underwatched, consistently entertaining sci-fi series. At its best, it incorporated the procedural element of X-Files, the sci-fi societal scope of X-Men, and the future shock of Heroes, and it built to a season 4 game-changing finale. I need to get Netflix so I can watch this.
Yeah. You'll love it, man.
Half of Seattle was wiped out while self-proclaimed prophet Jordan Collier and his superpowered flock essentially took over the remains of the city. The dystopian fun of a potential fifth season was nipped in the bud when the writer's strike popped off and the 4400's revenue didn't promote much in the way of grace from USA. Yeah, the writer's strike messed a whole bunch of stuff up.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. But it was a good show. And now, even though I like a lot of the shows on USA, yeah, a lot of them are basically the same type of
show. I will say 4400 was probably the best show they had, other than Burn Notice. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It really, really was. It was a really, really smart show. Especially if you're a sci-fi fan, this is a show that everybody would love, and I would love to see a movie of the 4400. I really would.
Sounds like they could make one.
No, they definitely could make one.
Oh yeah.
So that wouldn't be no problem, because it, like I said, like Mr. Bamford was saying, it was well written, characters are fleshed out, and the show really made you think. Like they said earlier, you could miss an episode, but it just made you think, and you know, it's great when you watch a show and it makes you think, and you're gonna know, okay, which way to go now. Because, you know, I love me some Burn Notice, but after a while, you're like, okay, there's nowhere else we can go with this show.
Yeah. You know, a lot of those shows are paint by numbers. You know where the hell you about to go. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
30 minutes before it happened. So, you know, but 4400 was, it kept you, you know, 4400 is what Heroes should have been.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Had that potential. But four seasons, you can't really, if you show makes it that long, you can't really be too mad once it's gone.
No, really, well, you can't.
There were still places it could have gone, though.
Right, and there's still a lot of stuff that needed to be answered and was not answered.
I say if it makes it past three seasons, then whenever it gets canceled, the writing team needs to know so they can write a finale for it.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem. Sometimes they don't know, and they wind up having to make a finale thinking that, well, we've got another season, you know. And, you know, like My Name is Earl, that's another show. It's a comedy, but you know, it's one of those things. They thought they were going to be safe, and then it wound up getting canceled, so they never got to resolve the whole series.
Yeah,
so.
Which that was bad. I mean, they got rid of Earl, then they came out with Raising Hope, which kind of done by the same people. But I'm like, okay, but yeah.
But that's the business of Hollywood.
And the final show is another one I slightly remember, True Calling from Fox. With who's the chick that's dating Rick Fox?
Elijah Dushku.
Yeah.
She's dating Rick Fox? Wow.
Or they used to. At least they used to as of a couple of years ago. I don't know if they still are. But anyway, hands down, the most frustrating cancellation event is when this bad series with tons of potential finally gets its act together on the eve of getting the axe.
Damn.
True Calling is another doomed John Harmon Feldman high-minded concept that finds Eliza Dushku doing her usual tough chick shtick as a morgue attendant who dead bodies sometimes ask for help. Her day rewinds and it's up to her to prevent their death or write some unfinished business. it was all very procedural and boring until late season one when Jason Priestley showed up as a drifter, also capable of reliving days, only he was of the belief that the dead should stay dead. I actually agree with him. The series instantly shifted into a high, entertaining, weekly cat-and-mouse dynamic with a cool metaphysical undertone and expansive mythology. It all made for a promising second season, and the promise was delivered for all of 6 episodes.
And there is a pre-hangover Zach Galifianakis doing his best to hide his face on the left.
Huh. And he's a lot slimmer.
Think he answers Elijah's calls these days?
Oh, she's the one calling him?
Yeah.
He's not in exactly too much stuff, though. But, I mean, he's in the big stuff, but...
Yeah.
Anyways. All right, I'll let you continue, Adam Black.
All right, I had found out that article we just read from was also from Complex magazine. This one I found yesterday is also from Complex.com. It's the 10 most controversial comic book stories of all time. And number 10 starts off with a man that is on the Click Nation shit list.
Yeah.
Jeff Lowe destroys the Ultimate Universe and Ultimatum.
Oh, he wrote that, huh?
Yeah. That I told you, that was the one that got me kind of on his bad side.
I hope he dies.
When the Ultimate Universe was created in 2000, its main objective was to reimagine the Marvel heroes for the 21st century. Origins were updated, personalities were fleshed out, and stories were more down to earth. As a result, you got a Black Nick Fury in a Marvel Universe.
Oh, that's number...
Well, no, that's part of the Ultimate Universe. But that was just an example. For a while, this line of comics was the best thing happening at the company. Unfortunately, Marvel then decided to destroy the entire universe in a bloodbath of a miniseries titled Ultimatum. Written by Jeff Lowe and illustrated by David Finch, this storyline features Magneto shifting the magnetic poles of the Earth in order to cause a series of disasters that destroy much of the planet's population. Civilians die, heroes die, and readers are forced to watch Loeb unleash this ultra-violent torture porn upon a cherished stable of characters. Cheesy plot points and gruesome character deaths abound here as the whole main series resolves around one shocking death after another with little substance in between. At one point, he was the best writer in the industry, so it completely shocked everyone when Lowe came out with this. We're all for a little gore in our comics, but the nonstop barrage of cannibalism and decapitation simply became too much to bear after a while. Amen. Thank you.
Glad I didn't read that.
Dude.
Yes. That would have turned to a rant.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I can feel the heat. Off Tim Dog right now. I can feel it. It's like boiling.
I'm cool.
Number 9, Superman and Big Barda make a porno. I never heard of this. Well,
what?
This is what?
Is that where that movie title came from? Zach and Miri?
No. Yeah. No, I think so.
Read.
This is from 1987. Over the years, Superman's villains had transformed the Man of Steel into a whole variety of bizarre things, including a super baby, King Kong, and the leader of an army of super ants. But John Byrne topped all of that when he created a supervillain named Sleaze, who turned Superman into the most unexpected thing of all, a porn star. In the story, Sleaze, who is kicked off of the planet Apocalypse for being so depraved, captures superheroine Big Barda and brainwashes her into starring into a highly sexualized dance videos in order to make enough money to fund his war against Darkseid. Looking to make enough, even more bank, Sleaze then brainwashes Superman into starring in a sex tape with her. They truly hit it big, so to speak. But as the duo are in the middle of filming an awkward makeout session, Barda's husband, Mr. Miracle, breaks through the ceiling of the shabby porn set and stops Superman before Big Blue does work on her.
Oh my god.
Bounce, wow, wow.
Oh my god. Really?
Whoa. That is nuts, man. That is crazy.
That is nuts, literally.
Barda and the Boy Scouts make a porno.
Dude, what issue is that? So we can go look for that.
592 to Action Comics 592 to 593, year 1987.
We will be going to the comic book store tomorrow.
Think they have that on digital download?
Oh, they might.
Yeah, that is crazy. Right? How about this? If you want. You know what that reminds me of? That's even crazy about Grant Morrison, The Filth. Mm-hmm. Probably the most sex depraved pornographic novel you will ever read in your life.
Alright. I'll make sure to put the NWO spark, music in the background.
Please.
Yeah, thank you.
Number 8 was Tarantula Rapes Nightwing, and I've read a lot of
it. Whoa, go back.
I think this is a female tarantula. Okay. Wanting desperately to please Nightwing, Catalina Flores, a.k.a. the second tarantula, decides to kill her crush's most violent nemesis, the monstrous Blockbuster in cold blood. You would think that snuffing out this adversary would be enough to win his heart, right? Well, Tarantula decided to ratchet up the creepiness to another level in the aftermath of the murder. As Nightwing lay prone on a rooftop after suffering the physical and mental exhaustion of his previous battles, Tarantula straddled him like a lovesick sorority girl into two-head sex. Unfortunately, a weekend Dick Grayson was muttering, "Don't touch me," the whole time. Thus, one of the first cases of male rape in the DC universe was recorded. Some fans still argue whether or not this was truly rape, but we're pretty sure Dick's pleas for her to stop don't fall into any sort of gray area. Think about the same exact details if the genders were swapped and you have your answer. Good point.
As everyone is speechless.
Wow, yeah, that's... Yeah.
Yeah, man, Dick.
Wow.
All right.
You got any most sexually explicit controversial stories we need to hear? Go ahead.
Well, here we go. Marvel reveals that the Green Goblin knocked up Gwen Stacy in Sin's Pass. This from the 2004-2005 storyline. This was one that J. Michael Straczynski wrote back in the 2000s. Basically, Marvel seemingly felt pressure to keep pushing the envelope with the character in order to inject life into the slumping sales of the Amazing Spider-Man title. But instead of giving creators the freedom to craft great plots, overwhelming in editorial interference led to some of the worst stories the companies ever put out. One example is this, where Green Goblin had impregnated Gwen Stacy, Spider-Man's old girlfriend, with superpowered twins while the two were still dating. Of course, the twins eventually came after Spider-Man in the present day after they had aged at an advanced rate, thanks to the Green Goblin serum in their blood. In retrospect, the sordid tale ruined the beautifully tragic story of Gwen Stacy's death from Amazing Spider-Man by making her seem like a complete hussy.
Just because she got down with the get down?
The green, yeah.
I'm confused.
Basically, what they said was this happened in a period where she had apparently left to go to Europe or whatever, and apparently she had the kids over there somehow. Uh-oh. And, the kids grew up to be were already adults by the time the storyline started happening.
And
just dumb. I mean, it's one of those I think a lot of fans would have preferred to forget.
Wow.
Golly, all of these have to do with rape. All right.
It's more. Okay, go ahead.
More rape, man.
Yeah. This is one where Elongated Man's wife, Sue Dibney, is raped in an identity crisis.
That's who said Elongated Man. Yes. I'm sorry.
So what happened to the Mr. Fantastic knockoff?
What happened to Elongated Man? Yes.
What happened? This is a miniseries called Identity Crisis that occurred in flashbacks, and basically they found out that Dr. Light who was always considered a joke villain for the most part. This gave an explanation to why he kind of started acting the way he was. Basically, at one point, he was a badass villain, and he somehow got aboard the Justice League. Yeah, I think it was the satellite at that time, and basically raped Sue Dibny, which is the wife of Elongated Man. This pissed him off. So basically, the Justice League, using Zatanna's magic, wiped his mind almost to where he basically became a lesser character. And it was controversial because you found out in that same storyline that Batman discovered this was happening, and they wound up erasing the Batman's mind as well for those 2 or 3 minutes. So he didn't know until recently that it happened. So it that was just a crazy storyline, and a lot of people would say that was kind of became a precursor to some stuff that happened at DC Comics during that time.
All right.
Okay. Next, I'm not surprised, is on here. Mephisto dissolves Spider-Man's courage. Basically, in the wake of Spider-Man revealing his identity to the world, Aunt May was shot, and there was no way he could save her. So the only way he could do it was to basically make a deal with Mephisto. But Mephisto wanted one thing in return, and that was basically he wanted their love, their marriage. So by basically granting Aunt May to live, he wiped their marriage, you know, from everyone's memory, and it never occurred.
Okay, now that is one that I did read, and it was kind of okay, like, to the very end. You know, it was like, okay. It had an ending like a Butterfly Effect kind of ending.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and pretty much J. Michael Straczynski, this was his swan song with the character of Amazing Spider-Man, and pretty much from what I remember, a lot of it was like he was basically told by editorial, this is what you have to do, this is what you have to say, and for the most part, if I remember correctly, the last issue, he didn't even put his name on it. So,
this list is filled with horrible stories, I remember.
Yes. I mean, crazy. I mean, it also, they made a point in the article to say that, you know, this made Joe Quesada pretty much seemed like a jerk, because he was pretty much the one that was championing the cause to not have Spider-Man be married anymore. So, number four, and this is something I was going to tell Tim one day. I'm going to have to explain it to him. The first Crisis on Infinite Earths, where basically DC had to reboot its entire universe. It was controversial just because of the fact that you had a lot of fans having to basically say, well, this didn't happen with the character. Now we're erasing all of that stuff and trying to fit new characters and old characters and new situations and that type of thing. It also ruined a couple characters as well. But basically, the basic rundown of it was that DC used to have separate Earths. And you had Earth 1, which was where the main characters were. Earth 2 was where the World War II heroes were, like the Golden Age Green Lantern, the Golden Age Flash, etc. Earth S had the Shazam heroes. Earth 3 had no heroes, just villains, so they were like evil versions of Superman and Batman, etc. And basically what they decided to do to avoid confusion is to consolidate all of them into one Earth and basically cause a reboot of the universe.
And this is why DC Comics suck, because they rely too much on alternate Earths and Earth 2, Earth 52, Earth 10. Just have one freaking universe.
One day I'll explain it to you, Tim.
You just explained it.
I'll explain the reason behind it. And it will make sense.
You just said the reason they didn't want to have multiple Earths and they just wanted one.
But it's better. It seems bad. But,
hey, let it go. Let it go, Adam Black. Let it go.
Explain it, man.
You explained it. You have been shut down.
Yeah, you know Tim Doc Marvel, man. You know that. Just...
Dude, he shut your shit down. Shut the fuck up.
I'm just saying.
That's true.
Yeah, he said you explained it.
That's it. That's all you need to know. Tim Dahl has spoken. So let it be written. So let it be done.
I'll have him explain it rage later to me.
Okay. All right. Jason Todd is resurrected in Under the Hood. Now, that made a good movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I liked the movie.
Yeah, the movie's fantastic.
But the problem, which stems from the Crisis on Infinite Earths, basically... how it was explained, you know, we know Jason Todd was the second Robin, and he wound up getting killed by the Joker in a storyline where fans got to choose whether he lived or died. And fans ultimately chose to kill the character off. And as a result, we have, you know, Jason Todd was dead. And eventually we got a third Robin in Tim Drake. Now, the problem with resurrecting them, they had to use the Superboy Prime character that was supposed to have been wiped out of existence with the Crisis on Infinite Earths, and basically caused the event that was called Infinite Crisis, I believe. But basically, it wound up causing a reality shift, and because of that, Jason Todd managed to live. You know, also you have a bath in Ra's al Ghul's Lazarus pit, and you have the character returning. So, you know, it wound up bringing the character back, and now he's like one of the mainstays of the DC Universe as the Red Hood. So,
why'd they have to use Superboy Prime? Wait, that's fine. He super punched reality, which miraculously brought Todd back from the grave.
Right.
Oh, that's how they did in the comic book.
Yeah, in the comic book.
In the movie, they used Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah.
That made a lot more sense.
Ra's al Ghul in the comic as well, but basically...
For the movie, they took the Superman Prime Infinite Crisis thing out of the whole equation. It just kind of simplified it, and yeah. That's probably why the movie is better.
Yeah, the movie is awesome. The Red Hood movie is great.
Yeah. So if Superboy Prime punched reality and brought him back, what was the point in the Lazarus pit then?
Well, when he came, all right, in short version, the comic book, when he came back from that punch, he was, now they said basically, yes, he was dead, now he's alive, but now his body just couldn't.
He was like a zombie.
Yeah, he was basically a zombie. His body was just functioning off of instinct, and that's when Agent Ra's al Ghul found out that he was alive, and they basically said, oh, that's Robin, because they noticed him doing certain things, and they said, okay, that's Robin. We need to figure out what to do. So they got him, and Ra's al Ghul was Talia said, we can put him in the Lazarus pit, and we may be able to save him. Right. And Ra's al Ghul was against it, and basically Talia went against his wishes and put him in the Lazarus pit.
Oh, okay.
And that's how he basically came to be.
And now another sidekick story.
Yes. Bucky Barnes was raised from the dead. If you remember, Bucky was Captain America's kid sidekick from back in World War II. And supposedly he died before Captain America was put in suspended animation. And basically this story wound up resurrecting the character. In 2005, where basically it was retconned that he had been working, he had been resurrected by the Soviets, I believe, and made into basically a cyborg, almost a cyborg zombie soldier that just, you know, well, not zombies per se, but basically just a mindless soldier that just took orders and, you know, didn't disobey them. But he became the Winter Soldier, and eventually he became the Captain America when Captain America was killed a few years back.
I was say, yeah, this is like this, like the article says, it's one controversy that actually panned out for good.
Yeah. So you know, it could have, like Tim said, it could have sucked. So it's good. Mm-hmm. And the last story is DC expands upon the Watchmen universe in Before Watchmen, and that's actually coming out this year. In a nutshell, Watchmen was basically intended to be a standalone story by Alan Moore. Of course, there's a controversy over just the fact that Alan Moore may have gotten cheated out of the rights to the story by DC Comics. But basically, they're going to revisit the world this year. It already started this month in comic book form. Basically, there is like a whole bunch of prequels to the Watchmen miniseries from, I believe that was 85, 86 when it came out. It's controversial just because a lot of people just don't feel the story should have been touched. It was meant to be that 12-issue miniseries, and a lot of people feel it shouldn't have been brought back as a, as prequels. So there you go. Most controversial comic book stories.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was cool. That was- about to say the like other, they're definitely right though. The Watchmen don't need to be brought back. So,
yeah. I mean, I'm probably like one of the big comic book heads that has not read that full story completely. But I'm kind of like you. Probably it's one of those things. It's hard to recapture magic that was already to recapture something that was already done years ago, and you aren't even utilizing the main guy who came up with all the ideas because he's still got with the company.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one thing about it, because I've like read it a couple of times. Matter of fact, I did an assignment on it. First of all, by doing prequels, Moore that wrote it, he put prequels in. Everybody, all the characters are well fleshed out, and it was really finished. Okay. Yeah, it doesn't need it. It's really just finished. I don't know where else you could kind of go because everybody has a background.
Right.
And there's nowhere else to really go with it. And if Moore is not doing it, then, I'm not saying they can't do a good job, but, it's kind of his baby. I think they need to go on ahead and work on DC has some other titles. They can leave Watchmen alone. They need to go on ahead and work on the the LGBT Green Lantern. Work on that.
Yeah. All right. Tim, I may need your little bit of help since you're more of the tech guy. Yesterday the 10th, or no, 11th, excuse me, Apple had its big conference. And they introduced new products. Among them was a upgraded MacBook Air.
Yes. And new, updated versions of the MacBook Pro with the nicer screen. And they've talked about some new apps for the iPhone and Siri coming to the iPad. No news about a newer iPhone, though, but that should be hopefully coming later this year.
Yeah, it'll probably be in the fall like they did last year.
Yeah, September probably.
They did announce iOS 6, which is going to integrate more with Facebook, I believe.
Just like it has Twitter integration, they'll have Facebook integration where you can do things and send it straight to Facebook.
The big news about iOS 6 is they're replacing Google Maps with basically an Apple version of Google Maps. That's pretty much the big thing besides, upgrades to Siri. Supposedly Siri will be able to actually, answer a lot more questions and give you a lot more information. That's pretty much that. Besides the Apple Map, app, that's pretty much all they have going and the Facebook integration into it.
Right. Next story is news on Ultimate Spider-Man and the new Hulk animated series. And of course, I think we've already talked about before how Jeff Loeb sucks and he's the man responsible for Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes being canceled.
Yes, of course die, Jeff Loeb, die.
It's been made official now that, yes, it is going to be canceled and being replaced by Avengers Assemble, which will be the new animated series that ties more closely to the movie world. And it'll be the same members of the team that are in the movies with Falcon added. And he's going to be the younger, newer member of the team. And, like, the viewers will see stuff through his eyes.
Oh, yes.
And Ultimate Spider-Man was renewed for a second season. And it's going to be joined by Hulk and the Agents of Smash on the 2013 animation slate. But it hasn't been revealed or, I guess, decided what network's going to be showing both of these, but it's pretty much known since Disney owns Marvel now and Disney has Disney SD, where Ultimate Spider-Man already airs, then put the two and two together, and there you have the new home of these two shows.
It may pop up on one. It may, you never know. It may pop up on ABC on Saturday mornings somewhere.
There aren't Saturday morning cartoons, is it? On Cartoon Network.
Right.
You can find a good Young Justice show, which I think I'm going to start trying to recap.
Oh, no.
Yes. But that's in the future.
Yes.
And for the Hulk and the Agents of Smash, it'll star Hulk, She-Hulk, Red Hulk, his son Scar, and A-Bomb.
Damn. A lot of new characters coming to animation.
Yeah. That, and which on which show is that going to be for? That's going to be on Spider-Man, right?
No, that's Hulk.
Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
I see that being like Ultimate Spider-Man, since it's like Spider-Man and his sidekicks. It's like Hulk and a couple of his sidekicks.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like what it is. I mean, like, especially with...
Yeah, it's like Hulk and the Revolution. Can't wait.
And the new power generation.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, and also in other animation comic book news, now that I'm thinking about it, there's going to be a new Teen Titans series called Teen Titans Go that will air on the DC Nation block on Cartoon Network, and it's basically going to be in the same style as the DC shorts that currently air on Cartoon Network.
Where the Titans have big heads and... Yep. Or like babies and stuff.
They call it chibi style.
Oh, yeah. That's the style they would do every now and then on the regular show. Like when somebody was upset or mad.
It's great big tear comes down.
Yeah.
It's going to be voiced by the same actors that did the original Teen Titans show.
Yeah, Teen Titans was a good when it first debuted years and years and years ago, like I think I've said before on the show, I did not like it, did not care for it, and it just got, but as the seasons progressed, it got better towards the end especially. But yeah, I'll do a wait and see. I'm not really thrilled about it. I was pissed years ago that they canceled that Teen Titans animated movie where they were going to do the Judas Contract.
Maybe one day.
I forgot all about that. I know it was in talks forever.
No, they wound up canceling it because just various things.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Yeah, we'll see.
DC got to branch out of doing it. Well, I think they're doing a Flash movie, animated movie. So thank God, finally. Other than somebody other than Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
Speaking of Superman, Superman the Elite on sale today.
Oh, yes.
Out today. Okay.
Forgot all about that. Might scoop that up.
I'll wait for it to be out for a while before I get it when it's lowered in price, maybe.
Yes.
That should be a good, should be good.
I don't like the animation style, but, you know, from the stuff that I've seen, but, I think I'll wait till the Dark Knight Returns Part 1 comes out. I think so, I'll do.
Yeah, that will be long awaited.
Yes.
All right. Next news article we got, next to last, Netflix and Redbox are avoiding the Disney waiting period with movies like John Carter. The waiting period, you may see in ads like for Best Buy and Target and places like that. When a movie comes out, they'll say this movie is not available on Netflix. So if you want to see it, come and buy it or go to Blockbuster and rent it, that type of thing. Because years ago, some studios put a 28-day ban on movies for Netflix and Redbox. That way, people can't just instantly get it on Netflix and Redbox. And, of course, this was almost right after I got Netflix subscription myself. So that pissed me off.
Yes.
So... Mm-hmm. How Netflix and Redbox is getting around is basically because they have to purchase the movies from Disney, and they're not getting real big discounts. They're just going to other retailers, buying the movies and putting them in the boxes and shipping them out to customers.
Oh.
So I figure that should be something where litigation is eventually going to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't think you can get away with that.
No, you really can't.
Can't. That's gonna
That's kind of Disney's fault. They always Mickey Mouse and everything, so that's kind of their fault. Because they could lower the rates on those guys. Cause, you know, Disney has that monopoly. They take it, have a little kid shows out, put that crap in the vault. You won't see it for 10 years. So
the Disney vault.
Yeah, the vault.
The Disney vault. Damn it.
Note, Warner Brothers slapped a 56-day waiting period
on all the rentals. Yeah, man. I mean, I think a lot of movie companies, they won't really. They make their money from people buying movies. They don't make that much money, you know, having retailers buy rent shit out for them. They want people to go out and go buy a Blu-ray or buy a DVD. It's, you know, they get more money back for that shit. So
yeah, I think they just need to stick to just the regular old method. For people like me, Gilmore, us in general, regular method for the rental. You give them just the movie on the rental. No behind the scenes. No nothing. That's it.
Well, that's what Netflix does. Now, at least the copies that I've gotten, those copies do not have any special features at all. It's just strictly the movie. That's it.
I don't even want a menu.
Just pop it in.
You pop that bitch in the movie play.
I agree.
Yeah, I definitely agree on that, man. Just put it in and play it in. For everybody, all of us who want to collect it and buy it, then just, you know,
right.
Let us get it, but don't be chintzy. I don't know what I'm talking about. I download everything. But, you know, don't be chintzy with it. Like, you spend the same amount of money on Blu-ray and you get it, and it's like, dude, this is just a movie. I don't have no behind the scenes, no director's cut, no commentary or nothing, just movies.
Right.
No digital download or.
No, I don't like digital download. Yeah. I can make my own digital download, man. I don't need that.
Not that we condone.
I'm sorry, not digital download. I'm talking about like digital copy and all that kind of stuff.
No, I don't like that. I mean, not that we condone any piracy of anybody or any copyright infringement. We don't condone that here at Click Nation.
We don't. I could give a shit about a digital copy. I really don't. I mean, because I'm never going to use that. You know, for some people, they use that damn thing. You know, I mean, all right, cool, whatever. But, you know.
I can see it being useful for someone that has an iPad. And you can, you know, instead of, like, getting a portable DVD player, you can just put the digital copy in your iPad. And you have something to look at, like, on a plane.
Well, yeah, but, dude, I mean, you can really just – it can –
Never or mind. You can download it from iTunes. I forgot about that.
Yeah, you can download it from iTunes. You can just get the regular thing and just burn it, you know, burn it yourself onto your hard drive in digital form and move it around. So it's not that's not really a big thing. So that's not really innovative.
Yeah. Not at all. All right. The last news article that I had, this was announced today on June 12th. Basically, at Verizon is talking about overhauling its complete rate plans and focusing more on, instead of phone plans, shared data plans. Basically, what is going to be – the plan is known as Share Everything, which will allow users an unlimited number of calls and texts and also allow data usage to be pulled among up to 10 devices on one account. With the move, Verizon becomes the first U.S. carrier to offer the ability for customers to share a bucket of data across multiple devices. Now, AT&T has also said it's working on plans that will allow such sharing, though it's not yet ready to
– it's time for me to leave AT&T.
To give its details.
Come on, everybody. Let's go to T-Mobile. Let's get Metro phones. They're tripping.
Now, here's the deal. Verizon will monthly charges on based on two factors, the number and type of devices a person or family has. The per-device charges range from $40 for each smartphone to $10 for a tablet, while the data portions range from $50 for 1 gig to $100 for 10 gigs of data, which basically means if you have one smartphone on your plan, you'll pay $40 for that a month for that having that smartphone on your plan.
Right, right.
For data, you would pay, let's say you want 1 gig of data, that would be $50.
Right.
So basically you'll be paying $90 a month for one smartphone with a gig of data for his plan.
I don't get the part about paying $40 a month for a phone that I already paid for.
Well, no, that's the service, man. That's the phone calls and the texts.
Oh, okay.
That's for your service of using the phone. So it's one flat rate. And then at that time, it's unlimited calls, unlimited text.
That's not bad, I guess.
And then, but for a gig of data, you pay $50.
That get expensive quick.
Depends what you did. If you did a lot of streaming,
if you do a lot of streaming and shit. But if you have Wi-Fi in your house and your phone is Wi-Fi, that cancels that whole thing out.
Well, yeah, that's what I do mostly. Yeah.
So if you're gonna stay with Verizon, you want to do that by all means. Because I mean, you know, like me, I'm always looking at shit on my damn phone. I will eat through a gig in like a week, you know. So
I mean, I'm doing stuff at work or whatever. I'll stream Pandora or whatever, mostly in the car because I'll stream Pandora and all types of stuff, you know, Stitcher, Sirius or whatever in the car.
Right.
I'll use up a gig in no time.
Right.
So basically, if I in between me and my wife, we kill it. So,
right.
I'm still under the unlimited plan on AT&T. So, you know, I'm lucky, but now they do stuff where they basically slow it down. If you reach a certain amount of gigs per month, they'll slow down your data.
The bastards.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't even want to get on AT&T. So, nah.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, I just feel this one may, you know, depending on how it's used, like Banff says, it may work out for you.
It may work out for you.
It may work out for you. It ain't going to work out for me, but it may work out for
me. I can tell you that now. That would not work for me.
Right, because, you know, I'm just going to put it out now. I'm going to say my little prepaid joint, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm Android and open this bitch. Fuck y'all. I'm unlimited everything.
Yes.
Everything.
They did say that they were going to get rid of paying. Basically, people used to have to pay $15 to $20 if they wanted to use their phone as a mobile hotspot. They're getting rid of that already. So that's
the charge or the?
The charge.
Oh, okay.
There, you can still use the mobile hotspot. I'm guessing it will then count as a gig, as part of your data.
Extra gig. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, that definitely hurt.
Yeah.
That's not really a good idea. You know what, though? This is an opportunity for some other companies, if you guys listen out there, for Metro, Cricket.
Virgin Mobile?
Virgin Mobile. This is an opportunity. They're messing up. They're leaving it wide open.
I'm just saying, man. I'm putting it out there for all my listeners. You Virgin Mobile, you can get your HTC Evo.
you know, $2.99 and then $55 a month, you got unlimited everything.
Yes, sir.
Everything. $55 a month. Y'all better look into it. I'm telling you. Try to save y'all some money up in this piece. That's what we do at the Click Next Podcast. That's what we do.
So that's it for the news, right?
Right. You did have that one thing that's a rumor, right, Gilmore, about the Avengers?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I forgot all about that, people. Yes. Rumor. Take this with a grain of salt. Don't know how true it is. We have not gotten official word back from Marvel. But word around the campfire eel is Disney and Marvel are dead set on taking either the number one or the number two spot of highest grossing movies globally of all time. So the rumor is by the end of the summer, they will be re-releasing the Avengers in the theater in a director's cut form that adds 35 minutes of movie back into the film. You know, I mean, so that movie already clocks in at what was it? 2 hours, 20 minutes, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you looking at 3 hours worth of Avengers, you know, for your viewing pleasure.
Yep. That is more money.
Right. You know, and as you know, as many people love that movie, I can definitely see if they release it in a director's cut, I can definitely see it going back to number one. I don't know about taking that whole number one spot global box office. It might, but the problem with that is the movie is going to be almost 3 hours long, so that cuts down on your show times. So
yes,
you know, so number two definitely. So, but hey, take it with a grain of salt. We, like I said, we hopefully, you know, in the coming days, weeks, Marvel will tell us something, and we here at the Click Nation Podcast will keep you updated on this developing story.
We're on it. And when we come back, we'll get into the subject of tonight's show, and that's dealing with some aliens. We'll be right back.
Just tell me one thing, Burke. You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study, not to bring back, but to wipe them out.
That's the plan.
All right, people, on the ready line. Are you me?
Yeah!
Are you me?
Yeah!
I got signals. I got readings in front and behind.
There's nothing back here.
Look, I'm telling you, there's something moving and it ain't us.
Get me out of there!
They cut the power.
How could they cut the power, man? They're animals.
There's movement all over the place! 5 meters, man! 4!
Aliens. This time, it's war.
And welcome back to the Click Nation Podcast. Now, after that exciting news that we gave y'all earlier, let's get into the meat of the show, and that's going to involve a movie that was just released. We mentioned it in the box office. It came in number two, and that is Prometheus. And instead of reviewing Prometheus, what we're going to do is go back and look at the first four Alien movies, and those movies are Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection. And we're not going to get into the whole Alien versus Predator nonsense.
Right.
Even though they might have been good movies, I have no idea because I haven't seen them. But we're just going to deal with the first four. And then we're going to give a quick summary of each of those four movies. And then I'll let my co-host here talk about them and discuss them and say what they liked and didn't like about the movies. And we also did a Twitter and Facebook poll asking some of the listeners and followers which of the movies were their favorite. So I'll read those after that.
We have fan feedback. Lovely.
Yes, we have a couple of feedback. And then next week we'll follow up by doing a review of Prometheus. So for those people like it late that don't want to be spoiled, don't worry. There's going to be no spoiling on this episode. And so with that, let's start off with the summary for Alien, which was released in 1979. I wasn't even born.
Mm-hmm.
The spaceship Nostromo, did I say that right?
Yes, Nostromo.
Nostromo.
Visits a desolate planetoid after receiving an unknown signal from a derelict alien spacecraft. While exploring the ship, one of the Nostromo's crewmen discovers an egg-like object which releases a creature that attaches itself to his face and renders him unconscious. Sometime later, the parasite dies and the crewman wakes up seemingly fine. However, an alien creature later bursts out of his chest and, after rapidly growing into an 8-foot creature, starts killing other members of the crew. After completion of the film Dark Star, some of the behind the scenes stuff.
So
that's the synopsis.
That is this. Yes. This one happens to be my favorite in the series, partly because I'm a very big Ridley Scott fan, and partly because it's actually the best. It's like the best written of the bunch of the movies, you know. It's a lot. I mean, and it kind of set up gave us a lot of sci-fi cliches that we see in sci-fi horror movies all the time now. You know, that dark, bleak future where, you know, everything seems like it's decaying and because this is not a happy future. You know, this is, you know, it's dark, it's dirty. You know, even the ship feels confined and claustrophobic and dark. I personally, like I said, that's my favorite Alien movie. It is the most terrifying of the bunch. You know, I remember vividly as a kid watching this film and being like scared out of my mind, seeing this film. But yeah, everyone, you should see this film. It's fantastic, I tell you.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, I definitely agree with Mr. Bounce on that one. It did create a lot of the cliches for a film. Also, I'm a little bit biased. I'm with Mr. Banff. I am a Ridley Scott fan. So, you know, love Blade Runner. What else I like from Ridley Scott? Blade Runner, the new Prometheus, which in my opinion is awesome, but we're not talking about that night. And I'm trying to think. He did Robin Hood, right?
Yes.
Okay, and Robin Hood. But back to Alien. Alien was great on so many levels because you have the artwork from H.R. Giger. And this is the style everybody copies with Aliens. If you saw Species, you know, they bit off of the whole Giger Alien. And like Mr. Banff was saying, he was a Ridley Scott had this thing, which you'll also see in Blade Runner and in Alien, where the future is pretty much... I think even on one of the documentaries I saw where they call it more of a deconstructed or a not so clean future where, you know, the ship is a claustrophobic looking, but the ship looks junky. It looks like the technology is changing so fast they really can't keep up. So they don't really create new ships. They just take an old ship and retrofit it with new stuff. And then when that breaks, they just stick something else on top of it. And what else? I mean, then plot-wise, you know, he brought back the whole monster movie genre and recreated the monsters. Cause, I mean, you know, the first facehugger scene, I mean, everybody jumped to that scene. I mean, now it's like cliche, but that scene and the whole thing with the you had the whole little subplot with the androids, plus the first time you have a female hero cast in the movie, because, you know, before then and after, most heroines pretty much are victims in horror movies. You know, the only other one I can think of is Sarah Connors, which is in Terminator 2, where she's no longer a victim anymore, and she, you know, kicks butt in that one. But besides her, you know, Ridley is the only one that's really like that in a movie genre.
All right. Why would you guys – this is the first time we're going to ever give our Click Nation ratings, which is going to be a 5-star rating. Basically 5 stars, excellent. You know, of course, on down the line, 4 good, 3 basically average, 2 bad, I guess, and 1 terrible. So – I would say, and I would even give 5 stars, has to be a must-watch movie. What would y'all rank it?
Alien is definitely 5 stars, classic.
Yeah.
You go to film school, you got to watch anything Ridley Scott. Or if you say you're a true film buff, you got to watch most Ridley Scott, because the guy's awesome at cinematography and, you know, being, you know, a director. You know, and if it seems like I'm all on Ridley Scott's dick, well, fuck y'all.
He is.
Cool. The dude's great.
He
I'm
is,
not even going to lie.
And he is, ladies and gentlemen. He's on his dick.
Yeah, but, hey, the dude's awesome. So, hey.
You know, I would agree with that. Definitely, it is definitely a 5. It is, like I said, it is the sci-fi movie that set the trend for all sci-fi movies thereafter. It's just so many things about it that make it an excellent film. I mean, it's like I said, the cinematography is fantastic. The script is great. The acting is great. The editing is great. The directing is great. The way the movie is cut, it makes it feel like you're. It feels like you're gonna die by the end of this movie. It's one of those.
It does feel like that.
Kind of it is. If you want to see a movie, how a movie is, a horror movie, sci-fi movie is supposed to be made, that is the movie that you want to look at.
Yeah, definitely.
5 stars. Yeah,
5 stars. It keeps you guessing. Plus, the best scene is pretty much, if you got to watch any scenes, the chestbuster scene. That's the best.
You have to see the chestbuster scene.
Yeah, even no one will ever copy that one.
Right. Even to this day, I mean, even as many times I've seen this movie and all the stuff that I've seen since then in movies, that scene still, on some level, bothers me. You know, because I think it's because that taps into one of the biggest fears that all humans have. They don't want any kind of parasite in their body that will kill them. And that is the ultimate parasite, something that will that is in your body and will burst through your chest.
Yeah, definitely. And I like that on with Mr. Bamp. Another thing about that whole scene that how Ridley Scott, like, directed, or the way they wrote it in the script. Because that's in the script, the whole scene, is they bring you into this assumption that everything is okay, everything is fine. You know, we got the face hugger off, we're chilling, we're eating, we're talking about going home. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's fine, and you're like, wow, you know, middle of the movie, everything's cool, and you know, nothing's kind of happening. You're just sitting there, and you're like, I mean, right. You know, something's gonna happen, but you know, the whole scene. And you're just like, whoa. I mean, how the whole scene just takes off and then
right.
You know, it's just like, it's just awesome how they just kind of go back. And it's very natural feel, because you feel like that's how people would naturally react to that happening.
Yeah, because the first part of the film is dark. It's scary, you know, especially when the face hugger's on there, you don't know what's going to happen. Then all of a sudden in the middle, as soon as the face hugger falls off, you're in this middle of this scene where they're eating dinner, they're laughing, telling jokes or whatever. And it's, I mean, and you feel, you kind of let your guard down. It's like, okay, well, okay, cool. Next thing you know, this man, the man starts coughing and choking and he falls out. This, the alien bursts through his chest and runs off the table, and it's like you, it's like the movie snatches you right back to that feeling, like, haha, I got you, you know, I got you, and then you, and then you fucked up for the rest of the movie. Like, what the hell did I just?
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, and I mean, even them, they're shocked, and then you have this little thing, and then you have the whole. I mean, you know, you have the whole surprise because on the ship, they're looking for this little thing that jumped out of me, you know, they have no idea, you know, that what is going right into. Yeah. And that's some of the surprise. So,
so that's Alien.
Yep.
Alien.
Singular. And now we have the sequel, Aliens, which was released in 1986. Lieutenant Ellen Ripley, the only survivor of the Nostromo, awakens from hypersleep 57 years later aboard a new space station. She discovers that the planetoid from the first movie, now known as LV-426, is now home to a terraforming colony. When contact with the colony is lost, Ripley accompanies a squad of Marines there aboard the Sulaco. And side note, this film was not directed by Ridley Scott. It was done by James Cameron.
Yay!
What are your guys' thoughts on Aliens?
You know, I like Aliens. I do not like Aliens as much as I love Alien. I just don't, because I don't think James Cameron is as great as a filmmaker as a lot of people like to act like he is.
So could, after seeing it before, knowing who directed what, could you tell a difference that someone else did it?
Yeah, big difference.
I mean, big difference. I mean, even when I was a kid, you can tell it's a totally different feel. Like I said, the first one is dark, claustrophobic. It relies solely on terror, you know, solely on, you know, just suspense. Mm-hmm. Aliens is an action movie. You know, that's all Aliens. Aliens is Terminator with a large budget. That's essentially what this movie is.
And it's funny because James Cameron was coming off of Terminator.
He had just did Terminator, then he does Alien. They feel exactly the same. This Aliens is a, like I said, it's an action movie with monsters in it. That's all it is.
Because it says that Fox wasn't even considering doing a sequel to Alien until James Cameron came along and said he wanted to do it, coming off of, you know, the big hit Terminator.
Right. You know, and by no means, like I said, it's not a bad movie. It, like I said, but it's just it's definitely a different movie. You know, and you have and I like it for different reasons than I like the first one. And there's a lot of people that think Alien, they think Aliens is better than Alien. They're wrong, but you know, I digress, you know.
I like to say, now I'm one of the people, because Mr. Banff is pretty much targeting that toward me. I like James Cameron Aliens, and I'll go in and give it a rating with Alien and Aliens. Both of those get 5 as a must-see to me. And in my opinion, both of them were kind of – with James Cameron, to me, I thought that was kind of – it was kind of a game changer a little bit in the genre. Like Mr. Banff said, first of all, this is – Aliens is not a horror movie. And second, Aliens is not about the alien, and it's not about the crew, and it's not about feelings. What it's about – is really a revved up B movie about, right, you know, shoot everything, kill anything that moves, kind of movement with sprinklings of some humanity, like very little. Like they add the little girl in there, Newt, to give Ridley's character a pretty much to help out with the humanity, with the nurturing, because in the stories, they find Ridley, and she's been asleep for 57 years, and, you know, the whole world has changed, and she's like a relic, and she has nothing to really hold on to. So her and Newt kind of bond on the whole thing. They're both survivors, and Newt is the age that her daughter was before, you know, she went into space.
I gotta throw a disclaimer in there. That whole daughter thing is not in the original movie. If anybody has ever seen it, it's in the director's cut, but they take it out for the original theatrical release.
Yeah,
you know. But if I look at the theatrical cut, just the regular theatrical cut, or even the director's cut, the Newt character is a cop out to me, because I just feel like they just stuck it in there to soften Ripley's character, to make her more palatable to people in general. You know, a woman can't be that tough. You know what I'm saying? So they are like, oh, you know, well, we'll throw a little girl in there. She can start acting like a mother to her. I've always felt like that new character is a cop out. She's absolutely, totally fucking useless in this movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. And the new character does kind of find a big plot hole. Let me kind of explain this. Matter of fact, this plot hole is explaining to me like a little kid. I was watching my friend's house. It was on cable. And his dad was watching it with us. And the dad says something that we had never thought about. You know, the little girl is surviving through all this stuff going on in the movie. Now, the dad said, you know what? That makes no sense. Because how is this little girl going to survive all of this stuff when, you know, it's killing the Colonial Marines? It's pretty much killed everybody on the ship. And, you know, if you know anything about these xenomorphs, you know, xenomorphs don't leave no survivors. Xenomorphs kill everything. They kill the machines. So, you know, how, you know, they just kind of like what Mr. Bamf saying, they needed her in there for something for Ripley. But in actuality, I mean, if you were really thinking about it, trying to be centered in reality, you know, when they got there, no one should have been there, really.
Exactly. It should have been them. They touched down. And aliens attack their ass. That should have been it. There should have been no survivors there.
Pretty much. And them just trying to get off the planet, basically. Get out of there. Right. That's what it really kind of should have been. But then they threw the whole Newt thing, and you're introduced to the queen alien, which now the queen, you know, because before aliens don't really have a sex. It's just, you know, they're just aliens. Just, but then they introduced the whole queen thing, which is a James Cameron creation. It was just trying to one up, you know, Ridley Scott, because he always said he wanted to do a different movie. Because, matter of fact, and off the success of the Ridley Scott one, that's why he wanted to kind of do Aliens, but they had changes went on, because David Giller is from the Alien project and Aliens, and what happened was they had studio changes when they wanted to do the sequel, and stuff just kind of got mixed up. And then at that time, Ridley was gone doing Blade Runner. So that's what kind of happened. That's probably why he didn't do
the second one.
Yeah.
Which I might add for next week's show, when me and Mr. Bounce, I've already seen Prometheus, but when we see it, I'll talk on that, how Ridley Scott gets his revenge.
Yeah, I had read an article where he said he was pretty disappointed that he wasn't even asked to do any of the sequels, and he was kind of disappointed about that ultimately. But like you said, he got his revenge on it.
Right.
Oh yeah, definitely.
What would be the click rating for Aliens?
Mr. 5.
Ben? I'll give it a 4. I'm gonna give that a 4. Because, you know, I mean, you know, and like I said, but it's solely because, I mean, it's just not the sequel. If I was doing it, it's not the sequel I would have did, but that's just me being an asshole. But, I give it a 4. It's a good movie. Don't, everybody, if you haven't seen it, definitely see it. you know. But yeah.
Yeah, I give it, you know, I give it a 5 on the fact that I'm into James Cameron, and this is like James Cameron I like. So I like Terminator James Cameron, this movie. I don't like Titanic. Hate Titanic. And you know, I like Avatar, though Avatar kinda tricks me. It kinda does me like how Hype Williams did me with Belly. Like, I was like, oh, this is awesome, this is great. Then when you watch it the second time, you're like, oh, wow, I didn't see that hole in the plot. This is not that
fun anymore.
Great, yeah. It's like, wow, you know, should I really have bought this now? Right.
Avatar's not that great of a film, ladies and gentlemen. No,
but, this reminds me kind of the much... You know, James Cameron, action kind of guy. And I know he doesn't want to do that stuff now, but that's the stuff I like from him, so.
All right. Now let's get into Aliens 3, which was released in 1992. Due to a fire aboard a Sulaco, an escape pod is released. It crash lands on the refinery/prison planet Fiorina. Yes.
Fiorina.
Quote unquote, Fury 161. Ripley is the only survivor. Unknown to her, an egg was aboard the ship. Dun dun dun. The creature is born in the prison and begins a killing spree. Ripley later discovers there is also an alien queen growing inside her. Following the second movie, Aliens, Weaver was not interested in returning to the series, and so producers David Giller and Walter Hill commissioned a third Alien film without the Ripley character. The premise was to return Ripley in a fourth installment, but Fox's president Joe Roth did not agree with Ripley's removal, and Weaver was supposed to make Alien 3. Interesting. Released in 1992, the film was troubled from the start of production. Without even a finished script and having already spent $1 million before then, pop music video director David Fincher, the third director considered for the film, was hired to helm the project. After production was completed in 1991, the studio reworked the film without Fincher's involvement or consent. Damn, that's cold.
Yes, it is.
Giller, Hill, and Larry Ferguson wrote the screenplay based on a story from an earlier script by Vincent Ward. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
You know what? I'll kind of head this one off, Mr. Banff. Let me see. Alien 3. Okay. I'm not really a big fan of Alien 3, and I was just going ahead and end it. Alien 3 gets 2 stars. Yeah, 2. Two. I mean, I'm really being nice, giving it 2 stars. So it's 2 stars because plot. I just didn't like the movie, so I really didn't like it. But I'll run through why I didn't like about it. I liked that they got rid of Newt in there. That was cool. But Ridley kind of didn't have any business. It was like it was disjointed. Okay, she lands on a prison planet. First, they want to bring up the whole sexual tension that she's the only woman on a prison planet, and then, you know, the alien arrives, and the problem that they have on a prison planet is there are no weapons. So if you remember Aliens, James Cameron movie, you know, when they went down to Colonial Marines, they had pulse rifles, flamethrowers, all kind of guns, and they had a hard time getting rid of aliens. This one, okay, the foil is you have no weapons, and you have to deal with the most dangerous creature in the universe. Okay, that was fine. But then the rest of it was disjointed. I mean, she tries to have relationships where they're trying to relate to Ripley. She's trying to get them into figuring out that there's a creature in the prison. And the whole surprising of the queen. You have the whole surprise thing of Bishop, which is always with the, I don't want to butcher up the name of the company, the waiting. What's the Mr. Banff? What's the correct name of the company?
It's Weyland-Yutani.
Right, with the Weyland-Yutani company, which is a construct from the first movie of Alien, which floats through the other three movies. Well, and yeah, that fourth one too, and it floats through there. But it's, you know, it's kind of a little thin thing that they make in there, which they use to kind of segue into Alien 4, The Resurrection. And it just all falls apart for me on Alien 3. So it really, they could have stopped at Aliens.
Now, can't stop when it's making money.
Right.
Can't stop.
Right. But Alien 3, yeah. You know what? I give Alien 3 props for the fact that they were trying to return it to the original kind of feel of the first Alien movie. But long story short, David Fincher was trying to make his movie. Fox executives wanted him to make a different movie, and they basically tied his hands and he couldn't do anything. I have hence seen both the David Fincher cut, his cut of the movie, and, you know, in comparison to the theatrical version, they are both not that great of a film. The little subplots of, you know, being on a prison planet, the only woman on a prison planet. It's kind of like Jetstream said, it's a very disjointed movie. Both versions are. It's just not. It really shouldn't have gotten made. They really should have did a little more prep time, and took time out to actually make sure that this was a good movie, instead of, oh, we're gonna cash in and, you know, make another Alien movie, which is essentially what they did. You know, but you should look at it just to say that you did see it. You know, but
to continue, if you watched first, you might as well watch the rest of them, huh?
Right, you might as well. You know, I mean, but yeah, I'm going to give it a 2-star rating as well. It is not a great movie. Alien 3 is not that great of a movie. It's just not. I mean, it's just, and I just don't get it. It's horrible.
So, at least I know not to go in with high hopes on that one.
No, definitely not that one.
Nah, man, no. Okay, you skip it.
And definitely not that fourth one.
Which we're
about to get into.
Yeah, we're about to get into Resurrection.
Oh, God.
The fourth installment, Alien Resurrection, released in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
200 years after the events of the previous film, Ellen Ripley is cloned, and an alien queen is surgically removed from her body. Already sounds convoluted.
Right.
The United Systems military hopes to breed aliens to study on the spaceship USM Auriga, using human hosts kidnapped and delivered to them by a group of mercenaries. The aliens escape their enclosures, while Ripley and the mercenaries attempt to escape and destroy the Auriga, hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, before it reaches its destination, Earth. While fans and critics did not receive Alien 3 well, the film still made millions worldwide at the box office and piqued Fox's interest in continuing the franchise.
Mm.
In 1996, production on the fourth Alien film, Alien Resurrection, began. Ripley was not in the script's first draft, and Weaver was not interested in reprising the role, but later joined the project after being given a reported $1 million salary and more creative control, including being able to approve director John Pierre Jeunet. The film, released in 1997, experienced an extended production and was described by screenwriter Josh Whedon as having done everything wrong with his script.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Okay, you want to take that one, Mr. Bam?
I will take it, brother. Oh, my God. Okay, yeah. Alien Resurrection is the absolute worst movie in the series. It is one of the worst movies ever made. When you see the end of Alien 3, Ellen Ripley kills herself because she has an alien queen in her body. She falls into a giant vat of molten lead. And she kills herself. Somehow or another, somewhere along the line, we have no idea how, But Weyland-Yutani has gotten hold of some of her genetic material to clone her to try and get the alien queen out of her body for their own, you know, because this is the continuing theme throughout the entire franchise. Weyland-Yutani wants one of these aliens for their bioweapons division. And they are stopping it. And I mean, here we go, another 200 years later, we're still trying to get this damn alien. And so, you know, so of course we clone her. They finally get it right after several failed attempts. Something happened in the cloning where the Ripley that we see is not the Ripley that we all know and love. She is now
she's a hybrid of an alien and Ripley.
She looks like Ripley, but she has some of the alien characteristics within her. The acidic blood. She's a little more animalistic. She has no emotions at all. You know, it is. I mean, and you know,
and plus on this, she's huge. The way they depict her, she's extremely tall and
extremely tall. Like,
that's yeah. a big you know, bitch.
But Sigourney Weaver is a very, very tall lady anyway. You know, they just but the way they filmed her, they made her seem like she was like 7 feet tall or something like
yeah.
that. But the movie is just absolutely horrible. It's just, there's just no other way to describe it. It is, if you're going to skip a movie in this series, this is the movie that you don't see. You just let it ride at number three. This movie is, I cannot stress enough that this movie should have half a star. Half.
How many stars do you give it, Leroy?
Wow. Because it is awful, man. And nothing can save it. Sigourney Weaver's a good actress. Winona Ryder makes an appearance in it. She's a good actress. I'm not even going to not. I like the director on here, Jean Pierre Jonet. I don't know. I'm not good with French. But directing wise, I mean, he makes a good action movie. I mean, basically what the guy is trying to do is he's trying to do his best to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. So, I mean, that's what he's trying to do on here because he does a lot of cinematographic tricks. The aliens can swim, and they have a really cool scene with the bounty hunters and the aliens, and that's cool, but it's not enough to save the movie. Plus,
did we forget the alien baby thing, whatever the fuck that was at the end of the movie? What the fuck is that?
Yeah, that was stupid. That was stupid. Oh, also an underlying theme which it runs through all the movies, along with the company, which they're known for as Whedon. It's also known for being known as the company. A running theme is basically don't trust the androids or the robots throughout the movies. And basically it ends where they're going to go ahead and create an honest robot that knows everything in this through Winona Ryder's character. As I think her name was – I haven't seen in a while. I think her name was Sale. And it's she's Call. Pretty much – Call, thank you. Call, Sale. See
why do I remember that? Why do I remember that? The movie is so terrible. I must rant.
Yeah.
And the alien baby thing, Really? It's some human, half human, half alien baby thing that thinks that due to some weird ass character who is plastered up against a wall, to I guess the only reason he's there to provide exposition for us is to tell Sigourney Weaver that this ugly pink alien baby thing thinks you're his mother.
Mommy.
They went through that. And another problem I have with this movie is not really a problem, but they tried to, like, I guess, for all my Star Trek friends, anybody who watched Star Trek or Dragon Ball Z, there's a tendency in some scripts where you take your most hated, you know, enemy, and then he becomes like your friend. Or you defang him. So by the time we get to Resurrection, they have really defanged the whole xenomorph creature.
Right.
Right. They're trained. They even have some of them that's trained. It's kind of stupid. It's like, okay, when Sigourney Weaver's character wakes up, they already have a bunch of them bred and are training them, trying to train them like, you know, like dolphins or whatever. So they're trying to train these things. So it's like, you know, well, okay, if you already have some, what's the point of Ripley? But I think they were trying to make a hybrid go between creating her to be a queen so she could, or they could tell her what to tell them what to do because they was having problems with control. And it's you know, it just wasn't good. So I would have to give it. I'd be nice and give it like one star, just not to diss the guys that did the graphics and the directing and the cinematography.
I'm dissing everybody who. Let me put it to you like this: the director of this movie has never done another movie. Period.
Yeah, this did kill him, and he was this like unknown it. Overseas. This killed him.
Right. He might have done one other film, but you don't know what it is, do you? Right. Alien Resurrection is, like I said, I honestly got one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I mean, there's it's nothing there, ridiculous. Huh? It is top five.
It's bad, man. I mean, really, no. And it's not even so bad as
entertaining. It's just a bad movie. It is.
I mean, let me I'll tell you how bad this is. This is really so bad that they tried to put. They put all these movies in the USA lineup. You won't find Resurrection in the lineup anymore. Like the rest of them, you might find them. You might bop around on Saturday, find them in the lineup. This one.
You'll find three.
You'll find Alien, Aliens, and Alien 3. You won't find Resurrection.
You won't find Resurrection. Resurrection is terrible.
Yeah, but you know the only thing that's worse than Alien Resurrection is Alien versus Predator. No, that's not. That's cruel. Alien versus Predator doesn't make sense, but it is still a better plot of movie than Resurrection.
I ain't gonna even say that.
And we're not even getting into those.
Both of them are just as bad as Resurrection. Both of them are. I'm sorry. I'm just going to put it out there.
And both of those are technically prequels, right?
You know, I don't know what the hell they are. They have to be because they're set in modern times.
You know,
so.
Well, you know, now, as far as I'm concerned, and I wait for Mr. Banff to see Prometheus, pretty much that's dead. I love it that Mr. Scott and the writers and they killed that. So that's it. So a spoiler alert, but go check out Prometheus. And basically, Alien versus Predator, all that is, in my opinion, is canceled. So.
Right. And I just happened to look up that director on Wikipedia. He directed three films, but the frequency in between them.
Alien Resurrection, right?
No, he directed 6 overall, but 3 after Alien Resurrection.
Yeah, Alien Resurrection. Do we know the titles of any of those movies?
Amelia, in 2001, a very long engagement in 2004, and Micmac in 2009. I have not heard of any of those movies.
Knickknacks.
Micmac.
Knick-knack?
Knick-knack, paddywhack, give him a double boom.
But, wow. Yeah. Whole kid, yeah.
And that was a French movie.
That's fucked up, man. That damn, they gave, that man's career got fucked up over that damn bullshit-ass movie. You know. But I will tell all our listeners, if you own a Blu-ray player, which you should if you own a high definition TV. Side note, if you own a high definition TV and you still own a DVD player, send us an email so I can talk about your ass on air. Anywho,
DeClickNation@gmail.com.
Send it, bitch, because I'm gonna talk about your ass, you bitch.
Hold up. I just want to say one thing. According to this guy's Wikipedia page, he was offered to direct a Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix and turned it down.
Oh, he should have did that.
Yeah, I don't want to direct a high-profile franchise movie. Nah.
Experience, it probably killed it for him.
But it probably did. He probably doesn't want to work for any big studio. Like, no.
That's true. Because you know what the bad thing about it, I honestly think probably the same thing that happened with David Fincher happened to this dude. It's just David Fincher is so fucking talented anyway, he just kind of pulled himself out of it. You know, I think the studio, because Fox is notorious for being idiots where science fiction is concerned, and I just think they were just like, no, this is what you're going to do, and you have no choice in the matter. You're just here to manage our movie set. That's it. But anyway, like I was saying, anybody on listeners have a Blu-ray player, go out and get the Alien Blu-ray box set. It is somewhere in my, I cannot, there it is over there. I think it's the Alien Anthology, if I remember the name of it correctly. But yeah, it is a, if you're Aliens fan, it is everything that you want in an Alien box set. I mean, it has documentaries upon documentaries upon documentaries upon documentaries. I swear to God, it's about a good maybe 12 hours of documentaries, this damn thing. And that's not even including all the production photos and still images and commentaries and each film has a director's cut. Each film has its own little extended additional director's cut or whatever. But it is the box set that you would want to buy last. And Amazon had it for $29.99, I think, last week, a couple weeks ago. I don't know if they still are running that sale. They're probably not. But if you can find it, you know, even at a reasonable price, cause, you know, definitely pick it up. Definitely pick it up. Like I said, the box set gets 5 stars.
So that breaks down our Aliens discussion. And, of course, like we mentioned earlier, next week we'll do a review of Prometheus. So look forward to that.
Yes. Did you go see it in 3D, Jetstream?
Saw them both.
Oh, that's right. You've seen it twice.
Yeah, I've seen it twice.
Oh. Jetstream did his homework.
Yes, and Jetstream doesn't go see movies twice, people.
No, I don't. No, I hate to say it. I'm a red box guy, and that's like Prometheus and Dark Knight. That's all I'm seeing for the summer. Maybe Spider-Man. Big maybe on Spider-Man. I think I'll leave that to Tim Dog, but big maybe on Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'm gonna go see that in 3D.
All right.
Looking forward to it. July 3rd.
Uh huh. We will have a show on that.
Yes, and we'll also break down the previous Spider-Man movies.
We can break down that train wreck of 3, huh?
Yes, you can rant and rave all you want to about it.
Rant and rave.
That's what we do best.
Yes.
Call it the Rant and Rave Hour.
Yeah. Hey, I think we're going to debut a new segment, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, we need to have that segment, the Rant and Rave.
The Rant and Rave. So yes. Look forward to that.
Tim Dog, did you say you had some feedback?
Oh yes, thank you for reminding me.
Yes,
we had some Twitter followers let us know what their favorite Alien movies were.
Oh, I hope it's not Alien Resurrection, because we just dissed the fuck out your favorite movie.
Yeah,
no one mentioned a Resurrection anywhere. So
cool.
Let's see. I am Big Ben 87 said Aliens.
Our boy Ben.
Yep. Classic Materia from the Cold Slither podcast also said Aliens.
Cool.
DBO2700 said 1. So I'm assuming he meant Alien.
The first, right.
Let's see. What else do we have? I'm not sure how you pronounce it. Montoyesque. I believe he's also he's a co-host on another podcast, Be in the Block. Him and Cyber Soldier Burf replied back. Montoyisk, he said the first one, so Alien. And Cyber Soldier, he said the one with the face hugger. You know what? I need to go back and watch the Aliens franchise. I forgot.
Yeah, because that's all of them, dude.
Yeah.
Sorry, bro. I mean, yeah, dude. I mean, that's all of them. So, you know. Yeah, get back with us, though. Specify one. Send it to us. We'll put it on next week's show.
And Jonas3000, he said, Alien has stood the test of time for its genre. Then again, Aliens is one of few sequels almost as memorable as the original.
That's true.
I give you that.
My boy John.
I give you that.
Yes.
Even though, like I said, I have to rant, the character of Newt is a total fucking useless waste of time. Why that little bitch is in there, I take the little bitch out. Can I get a cut without Newt? Can I cut around her little ass? That bitch gets on my fucking nerves.
We lose so much film because, remember, they based the last 45 minutes is her going to go get them.
That's all her ass, that bitch. You're fucking useless. I know you're a little girl, but guess what, bitch? You fucking useless. Kill yourself. All right. I've gotten that out.
So let's end the show by giving a couple of shout-outs. Shout-outs to, of course, the Cold Slither podcast, which I'm a co-host on with Classic Material and Eclectic. Shout-outs to the Eclectic Discussion podcast. He's cranking the shows out. I'm still behind on them, but I will catch up. Shout-out to Underscoop Fire. Check out the Underscoop Fire podcast. General Geekery. They have a podcast. Who else can we shout out? Claymation Werewolf, who is a contributor to the Cold Slither podcast. The Loyal Listeners. Get Off My Planet. Nick Jew. I Am Big Ben. Tatum 216. Joannis 3000. Who else has tweeted us lately? Get some shout outs here. Nothing Man. A.K.A. Chris, shout-outs to him. Don Delorante. Ponderous. And Debo 27,000, a new follower. And to everyone that follows on Facebook and Twitter, shout-outs. And thank you for listening. And also make sure to share the podcast through whatever social media outlet you frequent the most.
That's right.
Spread the word.
Share, bitches. Share. Give. Sharing give is, until it hurts.
Sharing is caring. You can follow me on Twitter at TimDogg98. Mr. Banff is Mr. Banff, MISTABAMF. The _ Adam _ Black. And Leroy _ Jetstream. And, of course, our Twitter is at TheClickNation.
Yes.
Of course, make sure to subscribe and like and share on Stitcher Radio. And, of course, iTunes are the two ways to listen to the podcast besides going to our website, theclicknation.com, and playing it straight from the website or downloading it. I've heard some people have issues sometimes playing it straight from the site. So if you do that, if you have seen that problem, just go and click the download button and download it to your computer, and it'll play perfectly fine for you that way.
Yep. Yeah. Or you can also go to Stitcher, and you can go ahead and add us to your Stitcher, clicknation.com, clicknation podcast, and also add all the friends. We got Cold Slither, General Geekery. What's another one, Tim? Those are the ones I kind of listen to. Oh, I forgot Eclectic.
Yes,
Eclectic Classic Material, which his show is, well, both him, Cold Slither, and General Geekery, those shows are like hilarious, man. Those shows are great.
Yes.
I mean, they're awesome, especially General Geekery. If you want to know anything about He-Man, I Have the Power.
That's show. That's two motherfucking show. Hours. Shit.
That's your show.
2 hours. Shit, nigga.
If there's, you some, want... there's some fucking geniuses running around on that show. I'm just saying. Yeah.
2 hours of a He-Man. And not only that, if you need like a He-Man action figure modified and customized, like if you... I don't know, if you upset about your faker He-Man and you're like, why is he blue and you want him to look like real He-Man, they'll probably spray paint it and exacto knife that shit for you.
Exacto knife.
If you need, especially if you need G.I. Joe.
Yeah, they are the people you want to talk to.
Those are guys that you definitely need to talk to. You know, we have Cold Slither. That's awesome team. Also, Tim Dog is a co-host on that, so you need to support that along with us. He's over there. And the Clay Material, who you know going to do some, who you know is going to do pop culture, talk about Pop-Tarts, Skittles, and Smurfette behind R. Kelly? Who the fuck does it?
Only one place, and that's the Cold Slither Podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
It's awesome, man.
It's a bunch of fucking geniuses over there, too. We love them. We love them all.
Get all of that when you sign up with the Stitcher. You'll get all of us lined up together. A nice, big, happy bunch like some grapes.
You can't avoid us.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? All together.
We like a pack of annihilators. I'm just saying. We like a pack of fucking annihilators. Dude, a bag of jelly beans.
Since you had brought up toys earlier, another shout out for William B. West. He's another listener I just thought of.
And, what's happening, William?
Yep. And fellas, any other shout outs you want to give? Floor is yours.
Yeah, let me shout out my girl Erica Tate, who is a good friend of mine from the old job, and
yeah, she liked the Facebook page and follows on Twitter now.
Yeah, she hit me up, you know, today. You know, I told her I'd give a shout out. What's up, girl? And hopefully, like I said, I'm gonna discuss with my fellow Click Nation members. She is the biggest geek female that I've ever met in my life.
Oh, that's cool, man. We need some estrogen, so that's cool.
You know what I'm saying? She needs to come on the show. But yeah, she's a military kid, so she cusses like we do. Fantastic. We love her. So hopefully we can get her on the show. I'm going to suggest it, and we'll see how it goes. It'll be fantastic and hilarious.
Yes. Love to have her on as a guest. We'll work that out.
Yes.
And do you have any more folks, Larry?
Let me think. Anything else I want to shout out? Shout out to Chris Nolan and the entire cast of Dark Knight Rises, who set a world record for IMAX sellouts in Australia just a couple of days ago. Like, yeah. You know. Sold out every single IMAX ticket in a matter of seconds. The entire IMAX pre-selling site crashed.
Jeez.
That's right. I don't know. Dark Knight. Watch out, Avengers. Dark Knight might be trying
Dark
to pull.
Dark Knight coming for you.
Might be coming at your ass. You might get a batarang in your throat. Bruce Wayne, bitches. Holla.
All right. I wanted to give a shout out to at Kojak Delta. He recently tweeted at the show that I guess start with the Cold Slither crew on. Of course, shout out to at Third Designs, Third Designs. You can follow them on Twitter and on Facebook.
The Twitter is Third_Designs.
Yes. And that's my homeboy Charlie from college. He's a graphic designer. Like his page on Facebook, you know, follow him on Twitter, give a comment or two, and, you know, he may make you the fan of the month. And, of course, shout out to General Geekery Underscoop Fire. By listening to those podcasts, especially General Geekery, I know more about G.I. Joe customizations than I would have ever thought I would ever know in my life. But, yeah, good podcast. I mean, Underscoop Fires, you know, those guys are just hilarious. The Voltron crew. And, of course, shout out to the Eclectic Discussion Podcast. Always, you know, a good podcast to listen to. Them, you know, until Cold Slither and Eclectic Discussion came along, I never thought podcasts could be produced so well. until those podcasts. Otherwise, it was just guys talking, but they have the background music, cutscenes, all that kind of stuff. So good podcast to listen to.
And, dude, we trying to be just like them.
Yes.
We're the best.
Sorry, kid.
We're the best.
We're the best.
We're the best.
Who? We, nigga.
Shout out to DJ Khaled.
Yes.
Shout out to my the web designer for the Click Nation, BLR_Productions on Twitter, aka Brandy. I'm also trying to work a way to get her on the show one time. She's a she knows her music, so that can be a future music show.
Hey Brandy, hey girl, how you doing?
Yes.
Oh, it's, man, we can do a tag team on the album, Mr. Bam.
Oh, what? See, Brandy, I ain't say that girl. That's him, girl.
I'll let her fuss y'all out whenever she gets on.
Cuss him out, baby. I just say hey, boo.
I just call her boo. That ain't her whole name. Keep it on the low, man. Good. All you we eat is low, man.
Nigga shit over there, boy. Hello.
That's what I'm bringing to the music show.
Woo!
2 Chainz lyrics.
2 Chainz. Although, that 2 Chainz does get down with that little verse where he said, my chain the color, Akon.
Damn. Pitch black?
Yes.
Just hit your...
I like
that. Damn, chain full of black diamonds. Go ahead.
Oh, I was like, damn, this dude is tripping.
I can't deal. That's too much for me. I'm too old for all that shit.
And on that note, we'll go ahead and end the show. So, once again, thanks for listening to this edition.
I can't stop nobody out, man.
Oh, go. Oh, my bad.
Oh, shit. He said, fuck, shout out, nigga.
You just did like you just spent like 10 minutes repeating the same shout outs I did earlier.
He just said Joe was rambling on the house.
It's gonna be simple. I just want to do a shout out all of our listeners to listen to the show. Special shout out to all you guys, you know, from Shitstream and the Click Nation. Everybody listen. There, that's it.
Thank you. We love y'all.
That's so succinct to the point.
That's all I wanted.
I'm so impressed. And he didn't even ramble this time.
Fantastic. I know. It's amazing. A complete dog.
So once again, for the Click Nation, for Mr. Banff, the Adam Black, Leroy Jetstream, I am Tim D-O-double-G, and we are the Click Nation, and we are signing off.
From the hours of 9 to 10 p.m., we will only use the words ass, damn, and hell. We will, however, never use the words or any other sexual or racial slurs. From the 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. hour, we will only use the words ass, damn, hell, and we will, however, never use the words or any other racial or sexual slurs. Now, as it pertains to video, we promise there will be less references. Oh. Hey, watch your mouths.
Oh, me.
We will have less references to our enormous genitalia.